Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hello, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya, the Communication Doctor. Now, today on my show, I have the lovely Yvette Ankara. Welcome, Yvette.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's lovely to have you today, and I just want to explain to my audience that I have with me a transformational coach. And I love that word, transformational, and I feel it's used in lots of ways and can mean different things to different people. So from your perspective, what's your take on transformation?
It's about creating real and lasting change. So I work in the space of using techniques from neuro-linguistic programming, so also known as NLP, and I'm also a performance coach. So the changes that I work on with my clients, it's about changing habits, behaviours, and really making those lasting changes.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Habits, behaviours, and lasting changes. And how did you get into this work?
So I've been interested in kind of transformational work for a long time because I am about personal development for my own self. Mm. And I first had an NLP session over 15 years ago. And the person I had the NLP session with ended up teaching me NLP when I decided I wanted to incorporate it into my work. I was already using some of those techniques with clients, but I knew that by investing in my own training and going and really learning those tools, I could help more people. And at the same time, I found that it really, really helped me.
Yeah, now NLP is a great source. I mean, just for the people that don't know, that's neuro-linguistic programming. And it's absolutely amazing in terms of helping people change their mindset and also kind of looking at things in a very different way, you know, from a therapeutic perspective. So it's really interesting. So I want to dive a little bit deep and go back to when you first had NLP training. So what was that for and what was that like for you?
When I had NLP for myself or the actual training?
For yourself, when you actually went. So I'm going back in time.
So the 15 years ago.
Yes.
I travelled at the time. I lived in London, and I actually read an article, I think in Marie Claire or something, and I thought, this is what I need right now. So life was very busy. I was working in more of a corporate space at that time. And I thought, right, I need something that will help me start to shift some of the things that are going on for me. And I traveled down from London to Brighton to have this session. And it was really, really interesting and really helped me start to reflect and change some of my thinking. So at that time, I think that was actually probably more than 15 years ago now I'm thinking about it. At that time, I was, definitely working in the corporate space. And busy burning myself out. So I needed to think of ways of how can I shift, how can I change? But I was looking for, in some ways, quick fixes, not wanting to deal with lots of things, just deal with the immediate stress that was right in front of me, rather than making a real deep, meaningful change in my world.
No, I understand. Could I go a little bit deeper of that in terms of when I asked you what was going on for you at the time, what was going on for you that forced you or led you to do this NLP? So just can you go a little bit more in depth for us, please?
Just to probably bring up there, it's probably the work, really, working stupidly long hours, not taking care of myself. And outwardly, things looked good. But inwardly, I was not very happy at the time in the space I was in.
Yeah.
And that led to my first episode of burnout. And it was looking at those things that I was doing and knowing I needed to change and not quite knowing how to change. You know, it was, I'd be so exhausted, but I couldn't sleep. So I didn't sleep for several days. I remember the time I didn't sleep for 3 days because I just couldn't sleep. I couldn't switch off. My body would not switch off. So I was permanently exhausted, but had no release. It was awful. And having those things happen over that quite a long period of time, but still managing to function. I'm not sure how I did it, but I did. Was part of what, you know, made me think, okay, I need to reach out. And I did lots of different things. NLP, I had one NLP session. I didn't repeat it. I just had one session. And it kind of helped me focus and reprioritize at the time. But I also did things like went and had massages, went and saw osteopaths and all these different kind of things, because my body was starting to manifest in lots of ways. So aches, pains, issues. But again, I was still in a space where I wasn't really allowing myself to heal from all of this.
You mentioned early inwardly that you felt unhappy, and just from the work that I do, I saw that, see that as internal, sometimes internal pain. What was making you feel unhappy internally?
I wasn't fulfilled. I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. My values were being compromised. And that's what eventually led me to kind of move on and move away when I got to this point where I felt so compromised I couldn't do it anymore. So yeah, a lot of my belief systems were not being met. And when I talk to clients about this, understanding who you are and your values is really quite important. So there's things that are intrinsic to you, and you have to kind of stand up and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. And in my case at the time, I was still living at home with my parents, so I could afford to just walk away, you know, from a job because I had a roof over my head. You know, not everybody can afford to do that. So I was quite grateful that I was in a space that I had that option to just walk away and figure out what I needed to do. However, I probably shouldn't have let it get to that point, but I didn't know what else I should have done. So hindsight is a lovely thing.
No, totally. And when you're going through something, you never know anyway. So, you know, that's important to reflect it. I think that's just us as human beings, when we tend to go through stuff, it's life, isn't it? And sometimes it's the best lesson as well to experience something on that level. But what I want to move on to, because I do like to go to the heart of what that pain was so people understand. And after I kind of go to the heart of that pain moving forward, I want to know when that transformation happened for you. Now, you said that you basically left home and, you know, you moved in. So tell me a little bit about that transformation in terms of you coming into that, you know, experiencing that yourself.
Experiencing the NLP and changing within myself, or?
Yes, with regards to your, what, because you are a transformational coach. So yeah. I would love to hear what your big transformation was and when that was. Did it start for you 20 years ago? Because obviously now you're in a different place. So when did that, when was the first time that transformation started for you, that you experienced that?
It, to be honest, it didn't really begin until a few years ago.
Okay.
So even though I went through all of that, I have burnt out more than once across my career. Yeah. But it wasn't until I came out of hospital a few years ago after having had a procedure I did not need and having to recover from that, that the true change really kicked in. So
what was that procedure?
I had a lumbar puncture.
Okay.
So I had a condition called fibromyalgia.
Yeah.
And fibromyalgia, for those people who aren't aware of it, is a condition that causes fatigue, muscle pain, muscle spasms, it affects your cognition.
Yes.
So, you know, there's lots of other things it affects and impacts. There's no cure. It affects women more than men. No one knows exactly why it's triggered. There's a myriad of reasons why people end up suffering with the condition. And yeah. I lived with that painful condition for a good 6 years.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
completely pain free now.
Mm, mm.
But when I was in that space, one of the things I had was that particular weekend I developed a headache which wouldn't go away. It wasn't going anyway.
Yeah.
I don't tend to get migraines, but this thing was not shifting. It was not like I was completely debilitated by this. I was in constant pain. I ended up in A&E and spent 15 hours in A&E before I got a bed.
Mm.
And it was they suspected I had meningitis.
Yeah.
So I went from that, you know, from this headache to this diagnosis of possible meningitis to having a lumbar puncture. The reason I say I didn't need it is because my symptoms then didn't correlate to that diagnosis, but they kind of went ahead anyway. So I spent 3 days in hospital, and because they hit a nerve, I basically couldn't walk for almost a month.
Wow.
So that was the biggest wake-up call, because actually on my discharge papers it says fibromyalgia on there. So that's what the problem was.
no, thank you for that. Because it's interesting, because yeah. I was thinking there was, obviously when you were talking there was more to this, and I always think it's really good for people to hear, to understand, so then that could help them to look at things differently. So as I'm speaking to you here, so that obviously the conventional route didn't work for you, so the unconventional or the organic or herbal route. So can you talk a little bit about that with regards to how you dealt with it from the NLP, the alternative perspective?
Well, after that particular incident, I started saying, right, something has to give, something has to change. I cannot spend every day like this. In constant pain or fear of pain as well, which was actually, the anxiety was actually quite big with that, because you worry about injuring yourself, you worry about getting ill, you worry a lot, and that worry also then makes you feel worse and makes you in more pain. So it's this constant cycle of pain, fear and worry. Whilst at home recovering from that, I said, you know, something has to change, something has to give. I cannot keep pushing my body and pushing my world in this yes. way anymore. Because even though I had this diagnosis, I was still doing my PhD. I was still launching businesses. I was still running after a toddler. I was still being a wife and a friend and all the other things I was doing. I didn't stop doing anything. And my body had been constantly telling me, you need to stop. And I was just ignoring it. So I got to this point now where it's like, right, I need to make changes. And I did what I always call the easier stuff, which is not always easy for everyone else, but I call it easier because it's the external.
Yes.
I looked at my environment. I looked at what could I change, what there was a role that I was involved in that was not helping me, serving me. I found myself not energized in that space. I find it very draining, and I resolved to leave that space that I was in. And I don't know if you've ever experienced this, or you know, some of the listeners might, when you walk into a room and your whole energy just drops to the floor, you just feel awful just being in that space. That's how I felt when I'd go there. And I was like, okay, I don't need this. I don't need this in my world because it's not helping me. So that's one of the first things I did, was do that. You know, I started looking at how I was running my business. I started looking at things I really wanted in my life, how I wanted to be, how I wanted to feel, and started making those changes. And then that was when I decided to train in what I was doing.
Yes.
And started to kind of pivot my business. So I was already making those changes, and I did that, you know, a good long time before I actually made the changes, but I started that planning and started again looking at my life and what I wanted. You know, at the time I was just turned 40 or something like that. So it's like, right, this is not what you wanted to see in your 40s. This is not what you wanted in your life. What are you going to do about it? So making those changes all around, and, you know, saying no to lots of things, saying yes to others. And then when I did my training, I ended up becoming pain-free.
Brilliant. You know what? This is so interesting in terms of this. You really have had this transformation, and that's what I wanted to kind of get to. And it's really interesting just listening to you and hearing about that shift. And what's quite interesting is when you feel healthy, or when you feel like you're, you know, you've not got, you get let go of that anxiety, then it forces you in some ways to start thinking or looking at your world in a different way. So I love the way that you said externally, you started looking at your business and thinking about how you can switch and pivot, because that is key sometimes. And not everybody's able to do that. Not everybody's able to adapt. So for example, now, you know, with regards to what we're going through now, with the coronavirus being at its height in this country, and you know, everybody is in feeling anxiety, it's really interesting to see how people react. It's interesting also to see how businesses react, because with businesses now, it's all about adapting, it's all about being resourceful. So all of these skills kind of come into play now for us and the average. And you obviously being a transformation coach and being through what you've been through internally and externally, having to switch and pivot, you know, it's a really good strength, and it's really good for other people to kind of hear, you know, to help them. So what do you feel as these times with regards to what we're going through now? What's your thoughts on everything that's happening in the world now with regards to corona? What's your thoughts?
Personally, I think it's a time to take stock and to reflect and to bring out that flexibility. So my whole sort of career has been about using transferable skills.
Yes.
How do I build on what I have? How do I move it? How do I, you know, change it into a space that I'm interested in? What else do I need to do to upskill myself? So this is a time to kind of really look at what you want and where you want to be. So, you know, if something has been a thought for a long time, now's the time to start bringing it into reality.
Yes, yes.
You know, that job that you've had may not be there. You know, for whatever reason, your business, if you started it, may need to adapt and change. We need to look at how we innovate. We need to look at how we use tech. We need to look at how we connect. Connection is still incredibly important. You know, I'm speaking to you from a space of being quarantined at the moment, and I'm quarantined with my family, which has its blessings and its challenges.
Yes,
but it's also a case of, you know, connection. I'm still connecting with people. I'm still reaching out to clients, speaking to people, doing stuff online, because people still need that connection. People still need to know that there's people out there to speak to get advice from, just to listen if they need that. So, you know, in times like this, understanding how flexible you can be is really crucial. And it's always been something that I've said, you know, flexibility. If you are flexible, you bend, you do not break.
Exactly. That's so beautiful. That's beautiful. No, I agree totally. I agree with you totally there. And it is all about, as you say, those connections. But also, I feel it's about exchange as well. That exchange, because everybody's in the same boat right now. Big businesses, small businesses. Obviously, the small businesses have been hit harder. But in terms of everybody going through the same thing, I feel even emotionally, a lot of people will be able to resonate. So I think some people speak out and are authentic and open about what they're going through, and some people hide. So, you know, it's sometimes bringing those people out that are hiding to release those emotions. And it's great to have people like yourself, transformational coaches, well-being coaches, you know, all these different people out there that are coaches, just to help others, really, to help them to come out of that state of feeling so anxious. And also, I think part of it is actually knowing or kind of experiencing that anxiety yourself. I think when you know something and you've gone through it, you're the best person to talk to, you know, and that's what's important. That's why I do this show, Real Stories, because it is about finding that real story so people can really connect. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
Okay, just to line it up a little bit of that, I'm going to take you even further back in time, because I want to go now to your childhood. So just to make it, to lighten it up a little bit, I want you to go back to when you were 10 years old. What did you want to be? When you were 10 years old, what did you want to be, and what was your fondest memory as well?
10 years old. So I've always wanted to do something that helped people. I've always wanted to change the world. So I was the kid that if someone said be a nurse, I'm like, no, I'm going to be a doctor. And I always wanted to be, you know, I was, if you remember Fame, when Fame was on TV in the UK.
Yes.
I wanted to be the teacher. I didn't want to be the dancer. I wanted to be the one that was in control and told everyone what to do. So that was me as a little kid, that jumping off a kid from Fame and organising the choreography and doing the routine.
Brilliant. Debbie Allen, wasn't it? That was Debbie Allen's character. That was exactly who I wanted to be. Yeah, that was me. Yeah.
And she'd say, so you think you can dance? And that was my line, you know? Yeah. So that was me as a kid. So that's also showing my age as well.
So, I remember as well, because I love Debbie Allen as well. I love that character as well. Yeah.
It was my thing. So probably at that stage, I was looking at what I wanted to do and how I could shape the world. At that point, I wasn't quite 100%. I went on to decide I wanted to be a journalist, which I trained in. But actually, I wanted to work with the, it's going to sound, you know, a little bit like the lamb, the criminally insane. I actually wanted to work with high level patients, like mental patients in prisons. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with those because I wanted to understand behaviour.
Was that when you were 10 or when you got a little bit older?
Around 10, I would say, as I said, I knew I wanted to change the world. I didn't know exactly how I was going to do it, but I knew it involved helping people and it probably involved writing.
So that's why
journalism probably was the main thing at that time. But so what I actually did is I did a joint degree in journalism and psychology.
No, that makes sense.
Now it makes sense.
Yeah, and that's why I asked the question, because I always feel when you kind of look back and you remember what you were like when you were a child, sometimes it's quite nice because that inner child is still within us. And it's nice to look back and to remember what you used to love. And sometimes for some people it changes, you know, when you attend, you want this and then your life evolves into something different and then you transform and do some different things. And for some people, you can kind of see the heart of that person. And that's why...
Yeah, for me, it didn't change. It's still that kind of... I always wanted to help people and also wanted to understand people. I wanted to understand why one person made a choice and the other person didn't make a choice.
So
that whole thing about behavior, choices. It's not surprising that I've actually ended up doing what I do because that's always been part of my story.
Brilliant.
Why is one path chosen compared to another? Why is one person think that compared to another?
Okay, so I'm just going to go move a little bit on because I always feel like another key age for me when I look back is 18. I want you to tell me one of your fondest memories when you were 18, because the reason I ask this question is when you're that age and you're going through puberty or you've kind of gone through the other, depending on where you are, it's a really key thing where there's a lot of changes in people's lives. And numerologically, it's quite important as well. So at 18, what was your fondest memory?
It's probably, because I'm an August baby. So I was quite, I'm one of the youngest in year whenever I do anything. So I just turned 18 and went off to university. And I was part of the African Caribbean Society at university. And we used to have something called ACFEST every year.
Yes.
So it's a society for African, it's a festival for African Caribbean societies all across the UK. And they all get together. And at the time I was getting together in Birmingham, I have no idea if this still happens anymore. It's been a long time since I've left that. a very long time. And our African Caribbean society had sort of closed down, was a bit defunct. And I was part of the group that helped resurrect that. And, you know, I organised events and so I was in sort of events and communications, which makes sense given what I was doing. and I organised us to all go up there and it was just so much fun to have all of these people together just celebrating us. My university, I went to the university in London, but it had a very, very small African Caribbean population. Even though it was a sort of central London university, it was quite, some of the things were quite specialised. And I was one of four black people on my course. So it was quite a big thing for us as this really small society to go and now meet all of these people from all these different universities. and do that. So there was a lot of fun being had whilst at uni and studying hard, of course.
No, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I love that. And it takes me back as well. But we didn't have a African Caribbean society where I went to university. That was, I remember my sister saying, don't worry, you know, you're going to have a society there. And I remember going, and there was a gay and lesbian society, because I went to an arts university, which is Bretton Hall's. Very different. So it's quite funny. Yeah. I love to hear those stories myself about ACFEST and stuff, because I remember going to my sister's university and experiencing that on the other side of her, because only 2 years between us. So I would pop down, you know, and do this. Yeah. That's absolutely amazing. I love that. But it also shows the activist in you, or the kind of the leader, you know. It kind of, and that's quite interesting, looking back and showing you at 18 what you're about, what was important to you, what your fondest memories with. It really kind of shines light and shows a little bit of your light as well as a person, which is beautiful. Yeah. I'm going to kind of bring it to a close now, but before I bring it to a close, right now in your life, what inspires you?
Ooh. Hope.
Okay. Yeah.
Hope for a different way of being, a different world, different perspectives. Mm. I have been really, really interested in the developments that have happened recently, and seeing how communities have come together, seeing how people have come together. Mm. Yes, some people have not behaved as well as you might have wanted them to. but that's human nature for you. But I've, you know, in the community I live in, I live outside London. Now I've got neighbours who are happy to get stuff for me. I've, you know, and once I'm out of quarantine, I can do the same for them. You know, yes. We've got a whole group of people who are supporting the local businesses, supporting each other, supporting the vulnerable, the elderly. And, you know, there's a lot of community spirit where I am anyway, but to see what people are doing and how they support each other, there's lots of hope. I'm reaching out to lots of clients, former clients, businesses, even potential clients who are having conversations with them, like, look, these are some of the things that you can do right now to help your business get through. So I believe that there is a lot of hope, and I believe there's a lot of change. And this is the time to step up, to shine. I really think it's not a time to even though you may be in isolation, doesn't mean you can't shine.
Of course.
I think that's what this time is. There's a lot of change happening. It's a real time to really make changes that you've considered for a while manifest.
Yeah. You know, I absolutely love that. And I think that's lovely that you're thinking on that level, because optimism is key really in these sorts of times as well. And hope is a lovely way to put it. Thank you very much, Yvette. And I'm just going to say, from Yvette Ankara and Tanya Communication Doctor, adios. My takeaways after talking to Yvette was that she has such a great tenacity and drive to keep pushing. She's had to transition so many times in her life, and she's been able to transform herself through her career. She said when she was a young girl at 10, she wanted to be the character in Fame who Debbie Allen played, who was taking control. And I feel she has played that character in terms of taking control of her life and being the activist and being the survivor for other people and pushing on strong. And no matter what the world has thrown at her, she's been able to cope. And now she's in a position now where she helps people to transform and go through that transition in their life to be the best versions of themselves. Thanks for listening.